Oliver Tickell. I'm a journalist, former editor of The Ecologist, and I've long taken an interest in the whole situation with America and NATO and Ukraine and Russia. And I'm getting increasingly worried at the bellicose nature of the Europeans towards Russia.
Now, there seems to have been an alignment back in the days of 2014 and the coup between the United States and Europe. Both really seem to sort of trying to wrench Ukraine through actually being involved in this coup away from the Russian sphere of influence. And I guess Victoria Nuland and her billions being spent on this sort of thing, they would have been quite happy about wrenching Ukraine away from the Russian sphere of influence and getting a pro-EU president, Poroshenko, I think was the first one. But anyway, what's changed since then? Because the Americans seem to be less enthusiastic than the Europeans these days.
Well, from my perspective, this has always been an American operation in which the Europeans were the victims. There are actually three victims in all of this. One of them is Russia, one of them is Ukraine. They're the biggest victim of all, and the other one is Europe. This operation was never in European interests, because actually the Europeans were doing really well, having at least fairly good relations with Russia and a good, reliable commercial partnership, basically with Europe buying European gas and oil and minerals at low prices, keeping the European economy competitive. The American interest was in part to weaken Russia, because their policy, long-term policy, is to have full-spectrum global dominance over any other power, and they realized that Russia was beginning to challenge that power, and that it was no longer kowtowing to the American and NATO interests. But I think a major purpose of it at that time was to wrench Europe away from Russia, to disrupt that productive relationship between Europe and Russia, and force Europe onto what they call the American energy platform, which basically means instead of buying cheap Russian gas, that Europe would have to buy expensive American gas. And that is exactly what is now happening with Europe buying imported American liquefied natural gas at something like four times the price that they were paying Russia to have it piped in. The outcome is that the European economy is at a macro level uncompetitive, and all of us are feeling that, with stagnant growth, high inflation, and a general sense of economic stagnation. So to carry on to what has changed, I think that one big thing that has changed is that Trump actually sees commercial opportunities with Russia. And you could say that this is a sort of a part two. It's a rather clever kind of switcheroo, because Trump thinks, hey, you know, Russia's got all these resources and we've got companies that can go in and exploit them. So he would actually, at this point now, like to have American companies getting into Russia and exploiting those opportunities. And all the more so now that Europe, very foolishly, has allowed that relationship to be disrupted. And Europe's collective interest, in my opinion, is actually that they should be the ones resuming that productive commercial relationship. And the mystery is, why aren't they doing that? Why are they going along with this war, which was never, in my opinion, a war in Europe's interests? Why are they doubling down on that? Now, as regards how willingly Europe went into it, certainly when Russia actually went into Ukraine, we instantly doubled down on the sanctions and everything. But going back to 2014, I think there was a different view. Clearly, the EU was trying to attract Ukraine into a partnership, but they really couldn't offer enough money. The deal that they were offering was a poor one. But they were reluctant to back that coup. And one example of that is the famous Victoria Nuland quote on that recorded phone call, the "fuck the EU," because Europe was still trying to smooth over the cracks, and Victoria Nuland didn't want those cracks smoothed over. She wanted to blow the whole thing wide open, hence, fuck the EU. And the EU did indeed get well and truly fucked. But now the question is, you know, why is Europe so damn keen on keeping it going when America is basically trying to pull back?
Well, it's a good question. Surely, you know, one organisation very, very important that you haven't mentioned is NATO. Based in Brussels, NATO is increasingly extending its reach to Asia-Pacific region, etc. I mean, surely they've played quite an important role in this. They're the sort of higher power amongst the intelligence agencies of Western Europe and the US.
Well, yes, but NATO clearly is itching for this war. But why is the EU going along with it? You could say that there's that NATO is largely composed now of European Union members. So the question is, why do these European leaders see it as being in Europe's interests to pursue and commit so heavily to this war with Russia? You know, of course, they talk about matters of high principle and so on, and how this was an unprovoked attack by a dictator against a free and sovereign nation. Of course, we know that that is a very incomplete version of the story.
NATO this week has announced that it's considering a preemptive action against Russia's hybrid warfare attacks. The chair of the NATO Military Committee says a more aggressive approach is needed to deter Putin. So this is clearly coming from Brussels. This is clearly coming from NATO. They're actually talking about NATO attacking Russia. They're saying that Russia is doing things like killing people in Salisbury. It's doing cyber attacks. And so quite clearly there is a push from NATO to actually start attacking Russia.
There is. There is a big push from NATO to militarize and potentially attack Russia. When I say potentially, of course, NATO troops are in Russia already. Britain is very active in this. We are directing drones at targets across the Black Sea. Recently, Russian oil tankers have been hit. Drone strikes have taken place in Sevastopol. These are NATO actions, and NATO is increasingly close to being an unquestionably active participant in this. But underlying this is, why does Europe and NATO and NATO and Europe can't really be separated, because it comes down to the same national leaders who are making these decisions. So why does NATO and Europe, you know, but specifically European leaders, why do these European leaders, from Keir Starmer to Macron and the rest of them, see this as being in their interest?
Okay, so let me float something as a possibility here, Oliver, and that is that we've got really an elite running things. There's very little feedback, if any at all, from the public through the voting system anymore. around Europe, maybe a bit in the States, but not a lot. You know, there's really only elite representatives of various sorts seem to be getting into the position where anyone can vote for them. And surely, you know, they're realizing exactly what you said at the start, that Europe is finished economically, and they've sort of painted themselves into a corner. So they're looking for someone to blame. Russia is right on the doorstep. And in a way, this is almost like a fevered attempt to constantly point the finger to divert attention of their public away from their total failures.
Well, that could be part of it. Another thing is that maybe Europe really does think that it can break Russia. If so, I think they're wrong. I think no way is Europe going to break Russia. I think Europe is much more vulnerable than Russia is, and they will be the losers. But I think that Europe maybe does have this illusion that it can break Russia, and that having broken Russia, that they can carry out the what was originally an American plan to balkanize Russia. And to open it up to exploitation over its natural resources, which are huge.
Yeah, but NATO is not the only organization, and the EU to want to break Russia. We had this back in 1941 with Barbarossa and Adolf Hitler. We had it back in the early 1800s with Napoleon too. So maybe this has been going on a bit longer than we're being told.
Yes. The lunacy is of Europe to think it can break Russia, and of the immense dangers that involves. And I feel and see no enthusiasm for war with Russia on the part of the great majority of Europeans. There is certainly no compelling national interest for Britain, and I think not for any part of Europe. Because, I mean, for one thing, this raises the threat, and it's a real threat, of nuclear war. And if Russia feels that its independence and sovereignty is threatened by a NATO attack, I think there's a very high chance that it will become a nuclear war.
But surely it's much more to do with brinkmanship. The idea is the threat of nuclear war rather than that actually happening.
Russia's position is fairly clear that if their independence and sovereignty is threatened by NATO, they will nuclear weapons if they seem to defending their independence and sovereignty. So we haven't reached that point yet, but if Europe carries through with its bellicosity, that is a possible outcome. But what also terrifies me, I mean, I'm a parent. I have children who could be called up to fight in this war. And I mean, what Ukraine is lacking, well, Ukraine is lacking pretty much everything in its ability to fight this war. It has no autonomous intelligence and surveillance capability. It has completely run, or almost completely run out of people to fight this war. Its capacity to produce weapons is a fraction of what would be needed. Indeed, all of NATO's resources in terms of weapons and ammunition and intelligence and so on are severely stretched already. But one particular thing that Ukraine simply hasn't got is people on the ground. Their front lines are falling apart for lack of troops. And this idea that Europe is going to be conscripting troops to go and die in the killing fields of Ukraine, that to me is something I view with complete horror. And I think most people feel exactly the same way. And this is why I think that our leaders are in fact in the grip of insanity, literally insanity. And I think they must be stopped. I don't know how to do it, but we really do have to stop them.
Well, look, you're implying here that what they're doing is a form of kind of sycophancy, where anybody that questions the policy is pushed out of the decision-making process.
I do think that one has to connect a few dots. And certainly doing away with jury trials and the increasing repression that we see of people with dissenting views on the genocide in Gaza and all of that, I think that we are seeing a degree of repression of civil dissent and a capacity by politicians to completely ignore public opinion. And all the principles that you and I were brought up to in terms of human rights and freedom and international law and the rule of law generally, all of these things that we believe in and were brought up to, all of these things are being thrown out of the window. And I think that, yes, we do now have states that are so with people and who despise the ordinary people, the ordinary electors, and are completely ready to betray all of their interests.
That certainly seems true, doesn't it? I mean, it's almost like kind of the end of the empire is becoming particularly worse, rather nasty. But look, finally, Oliver, what can we do?
What can we do? I think it comes from an anti-war movement. We have got various bodies. There is Stop War, there's the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, there's the Palestine Movement. But I don't think that we actually need we need much more. Those of us who oppose all of these horrific military ventures, we need to come together and have really strong anti-war movement, and one that goes way beyond everything that we've got right now. We can look back to the 1960s and see that there was a really strong anti-war movement then, opposing the Vietnam War, opposing the bomb testing. I think that we need to ramp up everything that's happening now to unify it into a powerful movement.
Okay, Oliver Tickell, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.